Senator Susan Collins all over the news in the last week or so. And a lot of that coverage not exactly favorable back here in her home state of Maine. Her introduction of Jeff Sessions as an appointee, looking to see him secured as the Attorney General of the United States, not terribly well received by many of her constituents. And then her rather unusual vote with regard to repeal of the Affordable Care Act. Now, this is a woman who said we needed to make certain there was a plan in place and that we weren't going to be essentially leaving thousands and thousands and thousands of Mainers uncovered by health insurance before any sort of a repeal were advanced. And yet there she was, like 1:30 in the morning, casting the vote that would, in fact, get that ball rolling. Joining us right now on the telephone, Mike Tipping of the Maine People's Alliance. Mike, good morning.
Good morning.
Would you say that you were at all surprised by the vote cast by Senator Collins, given her very public statements that certainly seemed to indicate she thought it made excellent sense to have some sort of a plan in place for people who would find themselves without health coverage?
So I would definitely say there's some dissonance there between her vote and her statements. I guess I'm not particularly surprised, given the fact that she tries to cast votes on different sides of issues.
This isn't
the final vote. I have, you know, some hope we can still turn her around.
The comments from Maine Senator Angus King certainly stand in stark contrast to the vote cast by Senator Collins.
Right. I mean, he just blasted his fellow senators that he couldn't believe that they were doing this, that they were taking away health care from so many people. And he has been going on the floor of the Senate all week and sharing very personal stories from people all over Maine that, you know, would lose health care with a repeal, that have pre-existing conditions or had high insurance premiums or had no health care before. And he's actually talked about his own situation when he was 29 years old. And because he had health insurance and had a, you know, a random preventative screening, they caught an incredibly malignant cancer that would have killed him very quickly. And so it's been just an amazing difference to see between our two senators, you know, him going on the floor every night and fighting for health care reform in the starkest terms, and Senator Collins, I guess, trying to be on both sides of it or voting against it or voting for a path to repealing it without a filibuster and without a plan to replace it.
Did you ever think you'd see a time where somebody like the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, is a more moderate individual in Congress than Maine Senator Susan Collins?
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
Maybe on this one issue.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've seen this thing with Collins on a bunch of things. You know, people were surprised that she introduced Jeff Sessions, senator from Alabama, to be Trump's nominee as attorney general. And people said, oh, you know, she's a moderate senator. Why would she do this? And, you know, people see her voting for this budget resolution and said, oh, she's supposed to be moderate. Why is she doing this? And Collins, it's not just about, you know, partisanship or even the issues with her. There seems to be a kind of old-fashioned Senate gentility that she really cares about. I mean, she talked about Jeff Sessions in terms of the way she knew him and how polite he'd been and nice and including to people of color in her experience, and not about his attacks on the voting rights of African Americans and things like that. And, you know, it's very much about personal relationships and about the functioning of the Senate. There is, I guess, something to be said about that, but I don't think there's any excuse for voting for this kind of budget resolution that has the potential of stripping away health care for 95,000 people in Maine, people that are often in desperate situations and helping and hurting a lot more than that. You know, everyone that has insurance, everyone that's on you know, Medicare or the VA, you know, it still affects them as well. We could be seeing the loss of the donut hole coverage for prescription drugs. We could be seeing a destruction of the individual insurance markets as insurers flee the system. You know, this is just catastrophic. And for her to go along with her party in that way is very unfortunate.
Senator King also pointing out the impact that the repeal of the ACA would have on rural hospitals, which, you know, with just a handful of exceptions, is every hospital in the state of Maine. I mean, we are right. Predominantly a rural state, and to lose the influx of monies provided by coverages under the Affordable Care Act, you're talking about a significant blow to the operations of those facilities.
Absolutely. And in so many towns throughout Maine, you know, the hospital, which is a hub for that area, is the biggest employer or, you know, the cornerstone of their local economy. That's a huge deal. And, you know, healthcare jobs have gotten even more important as we've been aging as a state, and that's become a more important sector. I mean, the idea of putting a knife into that important industry in Maine is just awful. And, I mean, the other thing is, Maine is a small business state. Mm-hmm. You know, more than almost any other state in the country, we rely on our small businesses. And they are the ones who are getting insurance through the individual marketplace or through the small business marketplace. Across the country, it's about 1 in 5 users of the marketplace are small businesses. In Maine, it's more like 1 in 3. You know, it is overwhelmingly people that are, you know, trying to run businesses, that are creating these jobs, that are the ones that are the backbone of our economy in Maine, that would suffer with this. And they're the ones that would, you know, that would come bring our state economy to a crash if this were repealed.
Mike, looking forward, where does any sort of a new health care plan for America come from? I got to tell you, in listening to a conversation on conservative talk radio here in Bangor just yesterday, there was the suggestion.
You weren't doing that again, were you?
Well, you know, I feel somehow it's my responsibility, as distasteful as it sometimes is. The idea that pre-existing conditions, first and foremost, were completely maligned in this conversation. There was a discussion between radio hosts. The mention of a pre-existing condition immediately brought the question, well, how many people have pre-existing conditions anyway? And when the host, who is supposed to be he who leans left, did not have a number at his fingertips, he chose, I think, perhaps very unfortunately, to just pull a number off the top of his head. And that number was off by about a factor of, well, 10. The suggestion was that there were some 500,000 Americans who contend with a pre-existing condition. And the quickest Google search will inform you that the number is closer to 55 million Americans who are saddled with some sort of pre-existing condition that could disqualify them from health care coverage. And that number was allowed to just sort of hang there and be presented to that audience as fact.
That's, wow. Well, I'm surprised. Usually they go with 47% when they don't know a number.
The other thing that came up in that conversation was how Maine's congressman, Bruce Poliquin, was going to play a key role in the crafting of new healthcare policy for the United States. They also mentioned a piece of law from recent history here in Maine, the infamous PL-90.
Mm.
It's being touted now as some sort of a panacea. That if we just had some national equivalent to PL-90, hey, we're good to go. No worries. PL-90 was designed to basically open up the insurance marketplace, right? It was so that I, as a Mainer, could buy insurance in North Dakota or Kansas or California if I wanted to. The problem right. being, the problem being, no insurance companies in any other states had interest in selling to consumers here in Maine, did they?
We tried it. Yeah, it was an epic failure. And not only was there, you know, this so-called selling across state lines, which is really a race to the bottom and no regulation, did not that not work and no one came into Maine? And of course they didn't, because, you know, insurance companies, they're based on networks of providers and on a history of being in a place. It's not something that you can, you know, just sell across the country that easily.
Mm-hmm.
But also it saw incredible rate hikes for especially small businesses across the state, some of them 100 and or 150% in 1 year going up in their premium. So, I mean, that the idea that that is in any way a success or a model is just laughable. I mean, we tried that. Maine proved that is not a way that works. I'd also say on the pre-existing condition, for many insurers, childbirth or the potential to have children was considered a pre-existing condition.
I'm sorry, wait a second. the potential to have a child?
Right, the differing insurance costs for men and women. I mean, you're not just talking about the $55 million with direct, you know, ailments or injuries that count as pre-existing conditions. You're talking about half the population.
So in addition to, for example, somebody suffering from cancer or kidney disease or diabetes or a hypertension, also the potential for getting pregnant falls into that mix as well.
Right, and the what we should say too about pre-existing conditions is everyone agrees those should be covered. The question is, how do you do that? Because if there's no limits on accessing health insurance, then you would just not pay for health insurance, wait for you to for yourself to get sick, and then, you know, buy insurance.
Sure.
And that would be, you know, only sick people would have it. It would destroy the individual insurance market. I actually think we should go to a universal single-payer system, so I have a different solution. But the solution that both Republicans used to put forward and that Obamacare did put forward was to have an individual mandate, make sure people pay for it. You know, these are three legs on a stool, that along with the marketplace that allowed people to buy it. And you take apart any one of those and the whole thing collapses. I mean, that's why there has been, despite 6, 7 years of Republican opposition on this now, no actual plan put forward, is because there's no possible plan that can cover these folks in the same way. So maybe they will come back with something that looks exactly like Obamacare and call it Trump Care or Susan Collins Care or something like that, and that would be fine. But in the meantime, what we're looking at is just them destroying the insurance market and healthcare in this country and in this state, and there's not much time to stop it.
Just what sort of disastrous consequence would repeal with nothing to fill the void have? I mean, it can we even begin to put a dollar value on the devastation?
No, and even repeal, I mean, I don't even know how you put a value on the human lives and suffering that would be the potential outcome. But even doing that and not having a real plan, that throws the insurance markets into such chaos that alone, even if they did come up with a really good plan right away after that, you know, it would already, the damage would be done. And it would be so much more expensive and so much harder to get care for everyone that gets insurance, not just those that do it through the marketplace.
Another major concern here in the state of Maine, we continue to hear state level lawmakers talk about Maine's opiate crisis, addiction destroying broad swaths of our state, including some rural areas being just absolutely devastated by problems related to opioid addiction. If the ACA is in fact repealed, a recent report in the Portland Press Herald indicates better than 8,300 Mainers who are currently in addiction treatment programs could kiss their coverage goodbye. Why isn't that resonating with Mainers and resulting in a flood of phone calls into the offices of Senator Susan Collins? Just that one issue.
Well, I think it is resonating. I think she's hearing from people a lot on this. I think a lot more needs to be done. I think this needs to become more of a public issue, especially now that she's voted the wrong way at least once. We've set up a website at contactcollins.org that hopefully is easy for folks to remember, and that you can go every day, send her a note, give her a phone call. And, you know, she is someone that has responded to public pressure in the past, that definitely sees herself as a moderate, has been on both sides of this issue, and I think there is a potential for moving her, and she is critical in the Senate. You know, it only takes three Republicans to block this from happening.
What is the best case scenario moving forward with regard to blocking a repeal of the Affordable Care Act, at least in the near term? What needs to happen, Mike?
Well, I think if people stood strong and said, we refuse to repeal this without a real plan, and we have that discussion about what the plan would be first, mm-hmm. I think that would probably delay things for a very long time, because that conversation is so complicated if you actually do want to do, as Trump and others have said, and not cut off people's health care. That would be a lot to figure out. And I feel like that is the not just the best case scenario, but the responsible thing to do for our government.
It's also important you mentioned reaching out to Senator Collins, making sure that she's aware that you don't want to see a repeal of the Affordable Care Act. And you can do that via contactcollins.org.
You got it.
Also important for people to reach out and offer their support to Maine's junior senator, Angus King, and to applaud his efforts for standing up for the Affordable Care Act.
Yes, and the House will be voting on it in the next few days, so Representative Paula Quinn, Representative Pingree, important as well.
Indeed. Hey, Mike Tipping from the Maine People's Alliance, thanks for your time this morning, man. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Don.